Pacers have 3 8/10 seconds to go the distance. A running three from up top. Corey Joseph from the bottom half of the center jump circle nails a running three.
It's Wednesday, and we welcome you into another Sideline Guys podcast inside Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. I'm Pat Boylan. About as far away from Indianapolis as you can get and still be in the NBA is Jeremiah Johnson. He joins us now from Portland. JJ, hello. We can actually hear the practice going on behind you, so it's good to have you check in with us here on the Sideline Guys podcast and from practice. The Pacers have won five of their last six. They played really well over this stretch since Oladipo has returned. Two straight on the road, which is really impressive, especially considering that was a back-to-back, even though those opponents were maybe a touch of lesser quality than the Pacers. What have been your observations of those last two in the six games in general?
And I guess before I get into the details, Pat, it's good to talk to you from Portland. This is one of those road trips when the schedule came out, especially in late November into December and early January. There were so many one-game road trips. So this really feels like it's the first time this team has been able to get away and kind of bond a little bit, not just necessarily on the court, but when you've got this two-day off situation on this Western Conference road trip. The team traveled to Portland yesterday, Tuesday, and then has a practice today. And then the activity will get more compact towards the end of the trip with a back-to-back at Portland, at L.A., and then a game on Sunday in San Antonio. But I always look forward to these trips, obviously. Maybe don't want my wife and kids to hear this because obviously I'm gone for 9 days. But I think it's important to for any team building situation for the players. It's a good situation. And I think to get two wins already on this trip, most people would analyze this five-game trip and say it'd be great if you could win three. And I think any optimistic fan would be, you know, okay with that. And to start 2-0 is a really good start. And I think this team, most impressively, did not even have a close game. There was not really 1 minute in either one of those games against Utah or Phoenix where I really felt like the Pacers could lose. And I think, you know, maybe the Jazz went on a little bit of a run there in the second quarter and maybe you questioned things just a little bit. But I noticed the confidence in the huddles. I noticed that these guys were dialed in and both were convincing victories.
The Pacers have not even played half of their road games yet. They've played 20 of the 41, so this will be 21 coming up in Portland. And a little bit later in the podcast, we will break down that Portland game, Lakers, San Antonio coming up. But 10-10 through not even halfway through the schedule of road games. They already have 10 wins. And, you know, to say that 500, it doesn't exactly jump out necessarily as, wow, this is really, really good. But two stats on this really stick out about their road record and how they played on the road this year. Number one is that only a third of the league is 500 or better on the road. So while 500 doesn't jump out at you as, oh, wow, this is really strong play, remember, this is on the road where only one out of every three teams plays 500 or better. And the other one is the Pacers with 10 road wins, not even halfway through their road slate, they won just 13 all of last year on the road. So you combine those two things, and I think you really like what you've seen from the Pacers in terms of road play. And we'll look forward in a little bit, but just these two, I think to start off the road trip, as you mentioned, to start them off in dominating fashion. We brought this up on the podcast before. It's a completely different team on the floor, but it's really amazing to see how the level of play on the road has completely transformed from last season.
And I saw some great ball movement. I think that's key on some of these road games is not only play really good defense, but you've got to move the ball. You've got to hit the open man. You've got to be able to overcome, you know, enemy environments, tough crowds that are going against you and players that can get hot at home. So it was really good, I think, to get to 10-10. And I said that, I think it was either the New Year's resolution show or the Christmas wish show that I said it would be a goal or a great wish for this team to finish 11-10, or I should say 21-20 on the road for this season. Because if you can get to that point where you're just a game at above or right below 500 on the road, and then you do what you normally do at home, you're in a great position to be in the playoffs and also potentially have a really good seed. And right now you have two road wins and all of a sudden you look at the standings and there you are, you're in sixth, and it's going to be jumbled, not necessarily a mess, but it's going to be pretty compact in the Eastern Conference, this race for a playoff spot. But I think it's really good how this team has responded. They lost those five games in a row. Victor Oladipo did not play in four of them, and I think everyone understands how much Victor means to this team. But I've noticed some subtle changes with the team since Victor came back, and even with Victor, I felt like maybe towards the middle to end of December, maybe he was forcing it just a little bit. Maybe he was thinking he had to do a little bit too much, and there were other guys as well in some of those home games that were trying to maybe score too much or worried less about the passing and maybe, as Nate says, getting theirs. And I think that once Victor came back, we've seen a little bit better team basketball. And I think Victor has done a great job getting his teammates involved because he understood from watching that he's, you know, I think he understands, I think everyone understands right now what Victor is and what he means to the team. And, you know, he's probably going to be, you know, I'm going to say maybe 60% of the rest of the way out, maybe 60, 70% of the games, he's probably going to be the leading scorer. But it can't just be Victor and then a big drop-off. You've got to get close to 20 from two or three maybe other guys. And if you do, or double digits from seven as we saw in Phoenix, and if you do, you're going to have a very good chance to be successful. And I think this team is just has a good vibe about it right now. And at 45th game of the season coming up on Thursday, I think you're in a very, very good spot.
We want to do a mailbag version of the podcast here this week. And Jeremiah, before we get into those, I don't want to get into too much depth on other topics because I think those who have tweeted in have asked a good array of topics. But a guy that I think deserves some love for his play lately, Al Jefferson, hitting on him real quick. He had 10 rebounds in 17 minutes against Utah. He had 10 and 7 in 19 minutes against Phoenix. He was effective in sort of starting that comeback, really, against Cleveland. He hit shots on three or four straight possessions over Tristan Thompson when the Pacers were down about 20 points. And we have learned, as of a couple of days ago, that Miles Turner is going to be out through the road trip and then be week to week. So it stands to reason Al Jefferson's play is going to be important. And I know he's one of your favorites, one of my favorites. He's a great guy in the locker room, but I wanted to send some love his direction and some congrats his direction, because I thought when he has played here less than 20 minutes, which isn't easy to do when you haven't played in all that time, I think after that Miami game, it took him a little bit to get his feet wet. Those last three, he's been really solid.
Yes, we enjoy the fact that Big Al is playing, so we have the opportunity to talk with him. But I was talking actually with Kristen Airy yesterday, and we were talking about some various team-related topics, and I said the one thing we're going to have to do moving forward is we're probably going to have to stop saying to Big Al, you know, how nice is it that you've been ready, or talk about, you know, being ready when your number is called, because moving forward right now, he is getting his number called, so he's a part of the rotation until Miles Turner comes back. There may be some games and situations where if a team has a smaller second unit, maybe you go a different route with that five-man, but right now, Al is showing he can play those, you know, 18 to 20 minutes a game. He can contribute, and still when you get him the ball on the post, he can be unstoppable at times. And it's great to see. You don't forget those post moves. He's done a fantastic job, and I look forward to seeing more.
All right, let's start here with our mailbag portion of the podcast. We got a lot of questions from all of you via Twitter, and we thank you for those. So let's start here with Sobro Pacers fan Jeremiah. He asks, with the changes and expectations that the Pacers fans have experienced in the first half of the season, does that change what you would consider your level of success going forward? And this is an interesting question, because on some perspectives, making the playoffs a year after, if Indiana is able to accomplish that, a year after having to trade your franchise player and get what just about everybody outside of the organization called pennies on the dollar, making the playoffs under that scenario back in July would have been really an unbelievable accomplishment, I think, to just about everybody outside of the building that I'm currently in. That said, it does kind of feel like, at least to me, the expectations have changed a little bit for the better.
I think the expectations are raised, and I think there's for good reason. And I think if you ask anyone inside that locker room what their expectations are right now, I don't think that it's just to make the playoffs. It's to get a good seed in the playoffs. And I think when the season started, maybe the playoffs were a goal, but I think it's okay to raise those expectations. And I think that we have enough of a body of work right now, and we've seen enough from this team to say they are deserving of a little more expectations, or maybe just a little more, you know, hope for a better seed. And right now, the record is very similar to what it was last season, but it just feels like a completely different team right now, one that is playing with so much confidence, and I think that is just playing with so much effort. So I think it's okay, but, you know, I think the other thing is you got to remember that last week of December, and there's probably going to be another one of those kind of weeks or stretches of the season, and it's coming. You can't just say you're going to just win five out of every six games. If you are, then great. But, I mean, it's the NBA, and for as good as the Pacers are playing, there are 29 other teams that are also trying to do just as good. And maybe we get to March and April, and there's going to be some teams that maybe are focused to the future and playing younger players, so that could help the Pacers. But I think it's okay. Raise those expectations, and I think that this team will embrace those raised expectations. I'll take the next question for you, Pat. It is from James at IP Basketball, a very active Pacers, we'll call reporter and social media user. And it's about Victor Oladipo, and it's an exciting time, not just tomorrow, but maybe moving ahead into next week with the All-Star announcements, whether he's a starter or he is a reserve. I think he will be on the team. He says, assuming Oladipo continues his current play, would you put him on an All-NBA team? And that is, of course, positions are taken into account, Pat, but that's top 15 player in the NBA, and maybe a little bit of a stretch right now, but I'm curious where you think on that.
He comes into Wednesday afternoon 11th in the league in scoring, and a handful of these guys ahead of him. I'm looking right now. Of the 10 players above Victor Oladipo in scoring, only Anthony Davis is taking fewer shots. So that gives you an idea of his efficiency. He's 11th in scoring. Of the top 10 guys above him, they're all shooting more. He's shooting 49% from the floor, which is tremendous. He's shooting 42% from the three-point line, also tremendous. In fact, none of those top 10 guys are shooting that well from the three-point line. And Lou Williams is the only other player, until you get down to CJ McCollum at 20th in scoring, who is shooting from the three-point line about as well as Oladipo. You couple that with the fact that his assists are up. You consider the fact that when he has come back into the lineup, the Pacers have looked completely different. I think it's a little too early for the All-NBA discussion because, yeah, top 15 includes that Western Conference, which has, so many good guards on that side. The Pacers will see one of them in Damian Lillard coming up. James Harden is clearly a lock. There are so many good guards. Russell Westbrook, down the line, especially out in the Western Conference, Jimmy Butler's now there, Klay Thompson. It's going to be tough for him to make an All-NBA team just because of those guys, but I think he's certainly got the qualifications. The question will just be whether he has the reputation and whether voters go, if it's close between Oladipo and Klay Thompson, they maybe say, well, we've known what Klay is for a longer period of time. As it relates to an All-Star, we're going to find out on Thursday, tomorrow as of recording this podcast, whether he is a starter. That's going to be difficult because he was fourth in the voting coming in, and he needs to be top two in the guards to be a starter. But I would be shocked, I would be stunned if he does not end up in this All-Star game, which really, all things considered, is an amazing comment to make. Victor Oladipo, it would be stunning if he doesn't make an All-Star game. That statement, I think, would have been pretty stunning at the beginning of the year.
I would completely agree with you, and I think that it'll be just great to see and kind of get a mid-season reward for Victor for all of his hard work, not just in the off-season, but what he's done to help this team. I look forward to seeing people, write more stories and heap more praise upon Victor, because I also think he's someone who won't take that too seriously. He won't take the praise that he'll be getting for if and when the All-Star bid and announcement happens. It won't go to his head. It'll be the same player. He wants to be what he's often said is he wants to be the best. And so until he gets to that point, he's going to continue to work hard. And I think a very deserving All-Star spot if and when it happens, whether it's this week as a starter or next week as a reserve. Mitch Lingen at Lingen underscore 34 DMB asks a question. Does anyone in the immediate area have softer water than Chris Denari? And also, who loses time when GR3 gets healthy? The first one's pretty simple. I'm guessing that no one has softer water than Chris Denari. He's in the gym right now. I won't go ask him, but I think his water track record speaks for itself. As for the rotation question, I'm not sure that – I mean, obviously, if Glenn plays 15 to 20 minutes, then those are 15 to 20 minutes that somebody else doesn't play. But I still would say you kind of have to have a backup three that's able to play. And if he's able to challenge Boyan, I mean, I think Boyan's the starter. But I think he fits right in, and maybe you just give Boyan a little bit more of a break at times, which I think can only help – what he's trying to do, because there are times when Bogdanović is guarding, you know, an elite wing on the other teams, and I think it does affect his offense just a little bit. So I think if and when Glenn comes back, you've got to take it slowly. I think we had probably five or six tweets about GR3 because there's so much anticipation. He is so well-liked, and we like him as well. We can't wait to see GR3 playing, but you got to take it a little bit slowly and don't have this great expectation for he's going to come back and just immediately be the old GR3. But I guess to answer the question specifically, I'm going to say maybe a little bit less of Bogdanović, and maybe, I don't know, maybe TJ Leaf's not playing a lot right now anyways, but I don't know who else is going to lose time. If Lance is playing well, he's going to play, and if he's not playing well, I guess he loses some minutes.
Yeah, and I think what you hit on in the middle of that is also very important. First of all, we have like 15 questions asking about GR3, and we don't know. There has not been an official statement. If we did know more, we wouldn't say it on this podcast, but I think we're comfortable saying that we don't know more. Other than that, he's been out with the team. He's been practicing, it seems like, every time, and I haven't been, you know, since I haven't been on the road, I haven't been around to practice, and we can hear them going on right now. But he's taking part seemingly more and more by the week in practice. But it's one thing to go from practicing oftentimes around the video guys and some of those guys who are practicing with him to be in an NBA lineup. And so I think it's just very important you understand expectations. We don't know when he's coming back, but if that time when he does come back is, let's say, right around the All-Star break, that ends in about February the 20th. Well, it would be natural to say he needs a minimum of 2 weeks to get back into game shape, to get back into his rhythm, to get everything back in the direction that he wants it to be, and to just start to play regular minutes, even if he is fortunate enough to come back from that injury in that time. You start doing that math, if he does come back around that time, which again, we don't know, that's just an educated guess, then you got to remember, you get into early mid-March, you've only got a month left in the season. So I think it's important to temper your expectations on him. I know everyone is excited to see Glenn Robinson III getting closer, excited to see him participate in some practice, excited to see him seemingly getting closer into that lineup, and hopefully it does come sooner rather than later, but he's been gone a long time, and there's a lot that is going to take time to get adjusted for him from a minutes aspect to a mental aspect. Take a look at our next question. It comes from Connor O'Malley, who submitted a handful, but I think a lot of people wanting to know about this. He asks, with the two-way signing of Ben Moore, does that ultimately eliminate the return of Damian Wilkins to the Pacers roster, even on a 10-day contract? If so, plans of him joining the coaching staff in the offseason. Just first and foremost, from a technicality standpoint, the signing of Ben Moore would remove the option of the Pacers signing Damian Wilkins to a two-way contract, but I believe that he is past the point of his career where he could sign that anyway. So no, I don't think Ben Moore necessarily affects any possibility of what might happen in the future with Damian Wilkins. But JJ, I know there are a lot of people wondering about Damian Wilkins and about the Pacers, you know, not picking up the rest of his contract the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think Damian's someone who's stayed around Indianapolis, and he's probably continuing to work out, and he's ready if the Pacers or another team are able to call him and to bring him on. And I think the 10-day contract is interesting because you would consider if someone got hurt at a key position, then he's definitely right there, able and willing. And so because Ben Moore signed it, doesn't impact the 10-day contract situation. You can only sign two of those 10-day contracts. I think the date to keep an eye on, to me, is probably the trade deadline and maybe even the waiver wire period. So you currently could bring Damian Wilkins on a 10-day situation, but I wouldn't anticipate anything for the rest of the season unless the Pacers had that open roster spot past the time where they thought any player that they might want would be available via waivers, or, you know, in that trade deadline, you'd like to have that flexibility if you had to bring on an extra player. So I think Damian understood the situation when he signed the contract in the offseason with the, you know, the guaranteed dates in the mid-January. And I think once he got brought back and actually was part of the opening night roster, he knew he was probably going to be there until January. At least he was guaranteed money for a little bit. And then after the fact, nothing was guaranteed. It was just such a crazy, you know, wrinkle to the story was he was notified on the final day and then started that night and then was able to hit double figures and knock down 3 three-pointers. You feel really good for Damian. You almost feel like if he's needed, he could be brought back. As for the coaching situation, it's clear that Damian made a very positive impact on this team and these players in a very short period of time. Even his birthday was, I think, the week after he was let go. The team had a birthday party for him, and I don't know recently, haven't been inside the locker room, and you'd probably know more than me, his nameplate was still up as of a week after he was let go. So nothing would be ruled out. We're not the people right now to say, yes, the Pacers are going to bring Damian back as a coach or as a player, either one. But I think that the impact he made puts him on a short list if they need help in either capacity moving forward.
And I think the other thing to remember, right now they do have flexibility with the roster spot, which is valuable around trade deadline time. And if they were to use that flexibility right now, one would think that it might be toward the position of power forward or center with Miles Turner not being out. So, you know, they like Damian Wilkins. You know that they are considering all of their options and what's important. And bringing him back might be in the future. We don't know. It would be speculation to say anything else. But you know that this is a guy that came back to the Pacers with kind of a bigger picture idea. It wasn't just to try to collect one more NBA contract and try to hang on. And you saw in those huddles, he was very active. He was sort of the coach before the coaches would come into the huddles during the games. But right now, the Pacers have more roster flexibility, and if they need it, they might look in the direction of a big. But I don't think you can rule anything out. The 10-day contracts have started, so if the Pacers wanted to go in that direction, seemingly they could. All right, this next question comes from Not Todd. He asks, with Victor Oladipo playing at an all-star level, Domantas Sabonis contributing, where do you see original Turner's future on the team? Is there a chance he gets moved to power forward? This could be generally about the rest of the season when Turner comes back, Jeremiah, or bigger picture. But I do think this is the $64,000 question, if you will, going forward. You've got a guy like Turner who's shown he's a starter caliber player, a guy like Domantas Sabonis who's shown he's a starting caliber player. Can those two play together on the floor at the same time? It's not something they have to figure out right now because Turner is out. Maybe not even the rest of the season because Sabonis has played terrifically off the bench. But these are two guys playing at an efficiency level of what typically would be a starter in the NBA.
Absolutely, and it was something that was talked a lot about the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season when Miles was out with concussion, and I think it's something that obviously is brought back up again when you consider how well the Pacers have played the last 2 or 3 games and have a win against Cleveland, at least well in the second half of that game. So the one thing that I would think looking forward, moving forward, is, and maybe not for March of this season, but moving forward, Domantas Sabonis is a big part of this team's future, and you probably cannot, a year from now, be in any situation where you're only playing him 20 minutes a game. If everyone was healthy, that's kind of what his role had been with this team, and I think you see what a positive impact he can make. I think, and I've said this all season, and I'm not sure that I waver from it very much, that it's great to have 3 starting quality 4-5s and to rotate them in amongst the game, and depending on who you're playing, some night maybe you're going to play Thad Moore at the 4 and Domas at the 5, and Miles maybe not. And then some night you might play Miles the 4, Domas the 5, and Thad play a little bit less. And then another night it might be Thad at the 4, Miles the 5, and Domas a little bit less. I mean, mix and match with 3 starting caliber big men and go from there. And I think that Nate has done a really good job of, depending on who's got the hot hand or depending on who you're playing against, mixing up the minutes and some nights playing someone and others. You know, we've seen Miles Turner, someone who is looked at as the leader to this team. We've seen him in the fourth quarters of some games this year not play as much when healthy because Domas had it rolling and you needed what Thaddeus could do maybe from a defensive perspective against that particular night's 4. Maybe he's not playing as much. So I don't think there is an urgent need right now to just dissect everything that's happening because also, Pat, you never have everyone healthy for an entire season. So I wouldn't be one of these people that is just immediately finding, you know, you got to move Miles or you got to move him to the 4. I'd probably say moving forward, I'm more likely to think of him as trying to figure out whether he could be your 4 and Sabonis can be your 5. But I don't know that it's urgent to do it right now because I don't want to mess up what they've got right now. And I think that's going to take a little bit more work and a little bit more chemistry to have those two guys on the court together than some of the other changes and moves they've made. So it's a valid question. I understand it completely, and I do think that as well as they've played, you know, even without Miles, you're seeing just how important Sabonis is to the team. But I wouldn't be anyone that's trying to push anyone out. I think that there's enough room on this team for both, and it'll just be the coaching staff's job to see how they fit on the floor. Tony Earls at TonyBones_317 says, do we, he's got the We Grow Basketball logo, so maybe he's on the team as well, but do we finish the season, need to finish in sixth place or higher to advance past the first round of the playoffs? Pat, I'll let you answer, and then I'll have a thought.
Good question. Right now, the sixth seed would play third seeded Cleveland. I think it's tough to say what seed they need to be without knowing who you play. I know Cleveland is 2-8 in their last 10. They're 2-8 since Christmas. They look terrible right now. I've always been on the train of when we've talked about potential first-round playoff opponents to not want to play LeBron James. The guy's been in the finals every year since 2010, let alone the first round of it. Right now, the 6-3 would be Cleveland and Indiana. Right now, we're 44 games in. It's too early to look at that. But obviously, the higher up the seed you get, theoretically, the more favorable matchup you get, and there's no guarantee that Cleveland's going to be the three. They could get hot and move up. A team behind them, Indiana, Washington, Miami, Milwaukee, Detroit, Philadelphia, could get hot and move that around as well. So I'm not necessarily sure I see it as a seed thing, but if the Pacers are able to make it, I do think there are different opponents that they maybe match up better with than not, and you can put me on the board even though Cleveland, the Pacers are 3-0 against, and even though Cleveland has looked terrible lately, if you're asking me who I'd want to play in the first round, the answer is not LeBron James, but Boston has looked tremendous, Toronto has looked tremendous, Miami's one of the hottest teams in the league despite just losing. You're going to play somebody difficult in that first round. But I also think on the flip side of that, at least right now, and this tenor could totally change in terms of who the Pacers might play in 2 months. So it's almost early, too early to look at that. And if Indiana is still in a position in 2 months like they are right now. But I think right now, you don't want to play. You're looking at some of these teams, and the Pacers are, if you're one of those top teams, I think pretty early on your list of teams you don't want to play. One reason being Indiana's point differential is one of the best in the Eastern Conference, which suggests maybe that their ceiling is a little bit higher than their record. And what Victor Oladipo has done, you know, what the Pacers are doing, this mojo that they have, I don't think any one of those top three, four teams, if they're playing Indiana in the first round, necessarily wants to face the Pacers. But the playoff conference in the battle will be very, very interesting to watch. I was looking at 538, which is a statistical website, and they were analyzing the odds of teams making the playoffs. And I think they've almost broken their machine, because right now they list the Wizards as a 71% chance to make the playoffs, but they have them as the ninth rated team in order of odds to make the playoffs. So they have the Pacers around 75, but what they're saying right now is somebody who's about a 7-10 chance of making the playoffs isn't going to make it. Philadelphia, as we've talked about off air, has an easy schedule the rest of the way. Detroit's schedule is a little bit easier. Milwaukee with the Dedekun, Washington with their star power, Miami with the way they're playing, there's not one team, 1-9, that you would say, I don't think they're going to make it. So that's going to make things fascinating going down the stretch. Got on a little bit of a side tangent, but obviously the more you can do moving up is good. But that matchup you face sometimes is a lot more important than the seed. If Cleveland falls to the 4, I don't think I'd want to be the 5.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation, Pat, but I think that that's the goal for probably where this team is right now, is to shoot for that 4-5 series and then see who you're playing, because that to me proves if you're in that 4-5 game that you're always wanting to be a home court advantage in the first round kind of team. I think that shows that you're not just eking into the playoffs, that you're a legitimate playoff team. So given where they are right now and the way they're playing, I think that's probably the goal. And if you're in that 4-5 series, I think you would consider whoever you're playing an evenly matched series, and you have a great chance to advance. The only matchup that I would say right now, or seed that I would think this team does not want, is the 8, because 8 is close to 9. That would mean maybe you're close to not making it. And I think Boston is a lock right now to be the number 1 seed. So given how well Boston defends, that's probably the team that I don't want to play if I'm a Pacers fan. Anywhere else, I'm not sure that you could say, oh, that's a great chance or that's a bad chance of advancing. It will depend on the matchups, but I think just for everyone, 6 was the magic number asked in the tweet. If you can get to the 6th seed and you can get to a better seed than you had a year ago and 2 years ago, and you're facing a team who's 3rd that maybe isn't playing with as much confidence as whoever is 2nd, I think that's a good thing. So 4 or 5, I think, is the goal. If you get to 6, you might have a good matchup. You don't want to play LeBron, but I have no idea what the Cavs team is going to look like and if they are going to fix things and figure things out. But it will be fascinating to watch.
All right, I think that does it for me for questions. Any others that stuck out to you we definitely need to hit?
Let's see here. Scrolling through. I think we talked a little bit off air, but I'm trying to see if so many GR3 questions. We've pretty much taken care of that. We've touched on Domas and what he's been able to do. I'll put you on the spot right now. Andrew Varner.
You know, I saw that and didn't immediately put it on my list. Obviously a loaded question, but I don't think you would find many fans, and I'm just going to kind of simply answer this. I don't think you would find many fans right now if Paul said, I will play the rest of my career in Indiana. I don't think you'd find many fans who would still undo that trade. Disagree?
I do not disagree at all. I think some youngsters probably miss him, and there are some things defensively. I think the Pacers do miss his defense because say what you want about Paul. He is an elite defensive player. And when the Pacers played the Thunder, the defense for Oklahoma City won that game. So I think there are some aspects that you miss. And I didn't mean to bring that up. I just kind of saw that. And it was a loaded question. I don't even think anyone needs to hear what we have to say on the matter right now. But it just reiterates the point. And I think if and when Kevin Pritchard does some interviews and talks with the reporters and the media, maybe after the trade deadline, it'll be great to hear what he has to say and to think about if when he's asked from some of the other people, probably not from us, but about the trade and how it's all worked out. It is amazing how well it has worked out, and everybody is looking ahead and then no reason really to look back.
I think the way Mark Boyle summed up the trade on our radio airwaves about a month ago kind of sums up, I think, a pretty good general opinion, which his comments were, at the time, he thought, with the circumstances, that it was a good trade, and that he has said now he removes that with the circumstances part out of that statement. So, no, I mean, look, there's no point in dodging this because this is going to be a topic for Pacers fans, not only this year, but going forward. And, we're a podcast that tries to tailor to the fans with an understanding that, we're not going to rip guys. We're not going to take unfair shots. If we have a bias, it's of course going to lean a little bit pro Pacers, but this is obviously something that the fans are regularly talking about, regularly discussing. And Paul George is a really, really good basketball player. My thoughts on it are that I would rather have Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis over Paul George, even if George was able to was willing to stay here for the rest of his career. That's no knock on George. That is how well Victor Oladipo is playing, and what I think the future will be for Domantas Sabonis. All right, let's take a look at our pick 3, and this falls well because there's 3 games remaining. You're in Portland right now, and then it will be Lakers on a back-to-back, and then it will close out with the San Antonio Spurs. So I'll give you the tough one here. I'll let you start the pick 3, and I would like to know what you think is a key for the Pacers to win this game in Portland. And the reason I say that's the tougher of the two, obviously Portland is better, but Portland has won 8 straight games over the Pacers in their building.
And it is one of the toughest environments, and probably after about the 2nd season of traveling around the NBA, it was apparent to me that Portland's one of those places that is very difficult to play, but it was very surprising to me, and what seemed like when you'd catch their highlights or you'd check the scores that they were having a pretty good season, they're 23-21. So yes, the Pacers have a better record than Portland, and prior to last night's game, they also, the Western Conference, it feels like they've got a big sort of jumble right now between 5 and 9. One very deserving team might not make the playoffs with the LA Clippers' recent surge. But right now, Portland is 7th. But yesterday afternoon, you looked and they were in 9th. So you respect what Portland does. You respect, obviously, their home court advantage and their backcourt, but you should not go into this game with any kind of fear. And so a key to winning the game It sounds simple, but if they shoot the way they've shot the last couple of games and the second half against the Cavs, I think they're going to be right there. Portland was a team that wasn't really known to be a great defensive team. I feel like they've had different, you know, ways they've played a little bit over the last couple of seasons, but I just remember the game at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It did not feel like it was close, and it was a game that Miles Turner also did not play. So the Pacers have kind of the same lineup that they had in that first week of the season, and Portland had the upper hand. So you hope it's not one of those bad matchups. I think the knocking down some shots and keeping their guards out of the paint, and I'm thinking that's something that Nate Mullen will be referencing right before the game, is you've got to stop the penetration. You've got to keep those guys out of the paint, because if those guards get into the paint, then everything else tends to hurt you. So I'm looking at Victor, who's played really good defense on this trip. He's had to guard Poker. He's had to guard Mitchell. And I'm also looking at Darren Collison to do the best he can defensively to kind of, you know, stop the dribble penetration. And then on offense, start hitting some shots and let Domas go to work on the boards.
All right, so our pick two will be this Lakers game coming up, and a key to the Pacers beating the Lakers. The Lakers are obviously well down the standings. They're 15-28. However, they have won four of their last five, at least as of this taping. I think they have one more game to go before Indiana, but they're playing better. Their opponents have dropped off some. My key to this, and I'm not even done looking at this, I started researching this when you were answering your question, and I am all the way back right now to a Cleveland game that they had. When was this? December 15th, and this is the first time, actually, so this works out perfectly. Since December 15th, we are over a month. Since December 15th, whoever has won the first quarter of a Lakers game has won the game. The Lakers have five wins from that point, and all five of those games, they won the first quarter. And while winning the first quarter is obviously an advantage anyway, in the NBA, typically, you can overcome a deficit. What that says to me is it talks about the confidence. I think the Lakers, I brought them up on a recent podcast, as I thought they, at the time, they had not won four or five. They lost eight in a row. But at the time, I thought the Lakers were disappointing because I thought they were a team that would struggle, but not struggle to the lengths that they had. And I think that first quarter is going to be so vital. If the Pacers come out like they did against Phoenix, like they did against Utah, this is a team that can get discouraged with a lot of young talent, but you know, not a lot of maturity and veteran leadership outside of Brook Lopez. If they come out and they play well early and you give them that confidence, it's shown for the last month. The winner of the first quarter has won the game, so I'll say the start to the game against the Lakers is what's pivotal. And as we look at our pick three for that final game against San Antonio, typically we go together on this. We didn't necessarily discuss one. We do know they're going to be without Kawhi Leonard for this game, so that kind of comes out of it. But San Antonio's 15-2 on their home floor without Kawhi Leonard this season. So that clearly is the toughest game of the road trip, and it's at the very end of it. Your thoughts?
I think it's one where you don't be satisfied, because I look at Portland and L.A. as a chance to win one, maybe two. And on the end of a road trip, if the Pacers get to San Antonio with three wins, maybe four, don't say you've done what you needed to do in this road trip. Go in there and think you can win the game. It is very, very difficult. I mean, you figure the next three games you're playing in what I think are two of the most difficult places to win, at Portland and at San Antonio. The stats may not necessarily bear them out right now. For the Trailblazers, just scanning the standings for Portland, they are just 11-10 at home. So that's very surprising to me. But you hit it correctly on San Antonio. They are 19-2 at home. And they haven't had Kawhi Leonard for that many games this season. So they're going to be tough. It's going to be a difficult place to play. San Antonio already lost a game to the Pacers. So my key, I guess, is just to say, rise to the occasion, and if you've had success on this road trip, don't think it's already successful. Finish it strong.
Yeah, a lot of that's mentally, a lot of it's physically too. The end of a road trip's obviously very difficult, and the end of a road trip against a team as good as San Antonio will be difficult, so you hope the Pacers physically are in a position to compete in that game. But I think maybe you'd rather have the toughest game at the end, just because if it's a game where it's going to be tough to win anyway, you'd rather be at better strength for some of those other ones. All right, we are talking to you in Portland. I have been hearing the squeak of the sneaker throughout the whole podcast, and I haven't heard that now. So are they starting to wrap up over there?
I'm actually in the hallway. The squeaks were so loud, you were hearing them through the door. It appears as though practice is still going on. Just to give fans a visual, we're at Portland University, and actually just a what looks like a a workout facility, not an actual practice court for the university. But sometimes when you're on the road, you don't always have the ability to get into their arena. So the Pacers will be at the Moda Center on Thursday, but today a nice afternoon practice and what is a really good stretch of the schedule. If you think about it, Portland last night, they played home against the Phoenix Suns, and Phoenix played about as well as they did against the Pacers over the weekend last night. So Portland did not have a real strenuous game, but they did have a game on Tuesday, and the Pacers' last game is Monday. So I look for an energized team. It's been a good practice from what I've been able to gather, and it should be no different rotation from what we've seen recently. So I think it should be a fascinating matchup, and it's one of those games I used to enjoy before I was at this job. I used to enjoy those late night games. It gives you a reason to stay up, you know, maybe drink an extra, put a pot of coffee on for the late night Thursday game. But we look forward to the broadcast, and we look forward to seeing all the storylines develop.
Coffee, Red Bull, whatever it takes. It's 10 o'clock on Thursday. It's 10:30 on Friday. Portland on Thursday. Los Angeles on Friday, 30 minutes before those tip times, so 9:30 and 10 o'clock is where you can catch Jeremiah Johnson on Fox Sports Indiana or on the radio pregame show as well. Portland, Los Angeles, San Antonio on Sunday. That's a 7 o'clock tip, your next chance to be inside Bankers Live Fieldhouse. They return against Phoenix at 7 o'clock. Jeremiah Johnson, appreciate you checking in from Portland, and best of luck on the broadcast coming up on Thursday.
Thank you, Pat. You as well. And also, we will have an Austin Crozier sighting, and you would be able to hear Austin as well, I believe, for the remainder of this road trip. He's joining you on the radio side of things, and so we look forward to trying to get Austin on Pacers Live pregame once or maybe twice coming up this weekend as well, a.k.a. Bojan Bogdanović's cousin.
Bojan Bogdanović's cousin joins us on the broadcast. Bojan Bogdanović will be on the floor for the Pacers. Game's coming up. Jeremiah Johnson out in Portland. I'm Pat Boylan. We will talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.